This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home. Thanks to the VA home loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I develop because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the fair. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Let me team gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the fair.
Let's freaking go. Yo, we are less than a month away. We will be kicking off on a Sunday night in the Sin City. Oh, you freaking kidding me. Big shout out to Philip Wright. He commits the three-star wide receiver at Destrehan, Louisiana, wide receiver. He was going to Michigan, and he decided to flip to the good guys. Pretty excited about that. We'll watch some of his film. We're also going to hear from the great Blake Baker tonight. But I wanted to start off with just a few things about Blake Baker that I've enjoyed up to this point, and a few things that I want to help separate fact from fiction when it comes to Blake Baker going into next year. I'll be honest. I have grown just a little bit on LSU's defensive personnel. You guys know going into this year, this is probably the thinnest LSU defense I can remember. There are legit question marks on all three levels of the LSU defense. So my question for you, you see the poll question, can you run a sub 5 flat 40-yard dash? I want to know your athleticism, because I know whenever you say something semi-critical or skeptical of a team, everyone always comments down below, can you run a 4-5? And the answer to that is yes, I still do have 4 years of eligibility left. So if Blake Baker wants to try out a former 5'8", 180-pound, I'm not 180 anymore, pass rushing defensive tackle, tell him my DMs are open. But yes, Blake Baker, I love him. I really, really, really do. So I say all this personnel stuff because that is very vague. I know a lot of you want to know what specifically do you see? Why are you specifically skeptical of this team, this defense? And the answer is a lot of uncertainty. We are still in a state of flux when it comes to the LSU defensive tackle rotation. The defensive end rotation should be pretty good this year. I think that's going to be a decent group, especially with what I've been hearing about Savion Jones. Braden Swenson, obviously we know he's a pretty solid player. Then you have the off-ball linebacker situation where we don't know what the rotation looks like there. I feel like there are two-ish proven commodities there, and you need some things to break your way. And I do think this LSU secondary can get into a youth movement pretty quickly if they do not see better play this next year from Major Burns, Sage Ryan, and Zy Alexander. So I am in a spot here where I want to sell you on Blake Baker. I want to tell you that Blake Baker is going to be a really good LSU defensive coordinator, but at the same time, caution you in knowing that the LSU defensive personnel is not where anyone really wants it to be. But I will say I have grown on them. I have. This is a group that has really made me like them a lot more as time has moved on. As we say hi to Pressure, we say hi to Brian, we say hi to Chance, Van, Tony the Tiger, Todd. I want to show some love as well for some of you that has blown up my NFL channel. I did a Jaden film study on his preseason game yesterday, and it is crushing right now on YouTube. So I really do appreciate that. You could check all that out. Power Hour NFL. Did one on Spencer Rattler as well as Anthony Richardson as well. Who was the other? As J.J. McCarthy. So pretty excited about that. Also excited Team USA wins gold, wins the gold medal battle, ties with China, wins the medal battle. A lot of things going on in sports. NFL preseason keeps rolling along. And I am more focused on our LSU Tigers. Okay, this is also pretty key. In the comment section below, or hit me up at Power Hour LSU on Twitter or Instagram, are you going to the game? Because we have all got to get together, at least on that Friday or that Saturday, and get together and watch some games. I'll obviously be doing some stuff for the SEC channel while I'm there, but I want to spend time with each and every one of you that are spending your time going to the game. I know of a few viewers who, you know, once I decided I was going, there was a few of you that decided to go. So I am looking forward to meeting some of our West Coast viewers, including my guy, Trey Beatty. So shout out to Trey. And we had Adam Elder as well. You know, there was a scrimmage, all right, and there was people there that was at the scrimmage, all right? And I will also say this about these scrimmages is they do tend to get a little repetitive. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, by repetition, when you're going up against the same defenses and teams and players, you do begin to pick up on, you know, signals. But when you see a play like this from Caleb Jackson, for those that are watching on YouTube, run that back one more time. This via LSU football. Caleb Jackson, this is to Whit Weeks, one of the better linebackers on the team. The Caleb Jackson hype train continues. So pretty excited about Caleb. But, you know, before we get into any type of scrimmage report or anything of that nature, I understand there are reports of Garrett Nussmeier over these past couple of weeks not connecting fully with receivers. And then you also hear reports that Garrett Nussmeier looks great. The weird thing about practicing in football, it's one of the few sports where you go up against the same people all the damn time. You legit in football only go up against someone that's not you 12 to 15 times a year. Nothing more, nothing less. Every team does it. So it's not a sport that I feel scrimmages can be conducive to how actual games will go. I feel like I can learn more from watching basketball team scrimmages or baseball team scrimmages, but not football. So we're going to get into some practice reports, what I've heard about what's going down. The overall sentiment, though, to go along with our Blake Baker conversation here, okay, you, whoever you are watching this right now, okay, the defense is getting better, all right? I take that with a grain of salt. Not necessarily all in on that, but I would also say, let's hope for the best. Let's hope what the beat reporters who are there, let's hope that some of the stuff that they're selling us is what it is. Okay? So I'll take a look at this practice report here from Zach Nagy. I've really been enjoying reading some of Zach's stuff. It's from his Twitter account. as of right now, this is your LSU starting secondary. And this goes along with what we've been saying. Ashton Stamps and Sage Ryan at corner. Major Burns as the star or the nickel corner. And then Jordan Allen, Jordan Gilbert as your starting safeties. Okay. Your second team. PJ Woodland, J.K. Johnson, Juwan Johnson as the star, then Kylan Jackson and Deshaun Spears. All right. This is going to be a very interesting decision by Blake Baker, and of course, Corey Raymond has a say-so in this. JV Antoviano is cleared. You know, he's out there, not on the first or second team. All right. And you take a look at this first and second team. The second team is full of five players who has never played a snap of LSU football outside of Kylan Jackson. The five of you, only one has played snaps in Kylan Jackson. Okay? So, Pegasus asks the question, where is Zy Alexander? Well, they are bringing him along very slowly. Very slowly. It is interesting, though, that his injury happened earlier in the year than John Emery's, about a month earlier. And John Emery's already full systems go for the most part. But I do think ultimately those two will be moved in slowly as time moves on. All right? The second thing from this practice report that I have also heard, Aaron Anderson is playing better, okay? This is one thing where I want to see it before I go in on it because, obviously, Aaron Anderson's metrics last year were not that great. CJ Daniels, though, has gotten better, okay? Dominic McKinley starting to get better, all right? Kamarion Pimpton playing better. And Jair Brown. All right. So at this point in time, where we are right now, okay, based on what we have heard, I am not sure if JV Antoviano is going to be a piece of this LSU secondary week one, right? Just not a whole lot of buzz from him right now. And I've been asked in some of our practice videos, what's up with Toviano? Is this someone that can be a big-time player for LSU this year? And the answer to that is, I don't know. Kind of tough to say at this point. All right, but, you know, this LSU secondary is full of players that has barely played, okay? Stamps, 1 year, very injury-riddled. Sage Ryan, very experienced. Major Burns, very experienced. Jordan Gilbert, somewhat experienced. Jordan Allen played a decent amount towards the end of last year. So the interesting dichotomy between these two things with the LSU secondary and what Blake Baker is about to break down for you here on PHL is that Sage Ryan and Major Burns are the more experienced guys. But I had a big debate with a former guest of PHL. His name is Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Probably the smartest college football analyst that I know. I've known Dave for over a decade now. He brought up an interesting point, and it was actually on my Power RSEC channel he brought this up. And it was a Twitter discussion. Experience doesn't mean jack squat if you're not good. It doesn't mean jack squat if you can't actually play. So, let me ask you this. Do you believe Sage Ryan and Major Burns, for the most part, were good football players last year? If the answer to that is slightly no, then this is a good thing, right? This is a good thing that there are, in these first and second units, a bunch of players, but not a whole lot of starts. All right? So, I'm growing on the youth of the LSU defense, okay? Now, something else that excites me about this defensive crop of young players is LSU has been on a horrendous, and I mean a horrendous run of their four-star recruits or better defensive players not being good. I mean, it is a long run now of 4-ish to 5 years. Sure. Yeah, guys like B.J. Ojulari and Jaquelin Roy give ROI on their recruit rankings. But, I mean, there has been just a ridiculous long run of guys that top 100, top 150 guys, clear-cut blue chip being recruited by all the SEC schools, and they be total duds. They not only transfer, they transfer to a D2 school, a non-Power 5 school, and so on and so on. If you want all the data, go to patreon.com/LSU football. Sign up now. Every sign up gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail. You're going to get my game grades, all the extra breakdowns we do. And we just did a deep breakdown on this where LSU from about 2011 to 2017 had a ridiculously high defensive blue chip hit rate. It was in the 60s. And over the past couple of years, it's been closer to the 30s. Now, it depends on how you define a hit, but they have had a whole lot of just random misses, basically meaning that at some point that's going to regress back positively. So, yes, LSU's had a lot of defensive recruits not work out recently, but could it be that it's just a run of bad luck? Sure. Could it be it's a run of bad luck mixed with not as great coaching and development? Sure, there's probably some of that mixed in there. But another reason why I am a little bit more excited about the youth of LSU's defense, and also on Patreon, I went on ahead and did a full grading breakdown of each and every recruit. Some of the recruits, I did not agree with their recruiting rankings. Some I felt were too low, some I felt were too high for some of these incoming LSU players. But part of why I'm bullish on this last recruiting class and the next one is it's got to start regressing back positively, all right? It does with better coaching, better development, better NFL pedigree with the new coaches that are in here. Like, there's just going to be more guys that hit. And what has really hurt LSU, and the only thing that has saved LSU was a COVID year. That's it. I mean, that really saved them. You wouldn't have had Jerick Bernard Converse. You wouldn't have had Joe Fouché. You wouldn't have had a lot of these patchwork guys that fit in perfectly with what you were doing. LSU secondary had a bad run, very bad run. Could it be that we're on a good run right now? I'm telling you right now, the true freshman that's probably not going to play at all this year, who I think is very interesting, is Michael Turner. I can sit and watch Michael Turner DB reps all day. The kid is surreal when it comes to athleticism and fluidity, but you guys know how, you know, when it comes to football players, I like my football players thick. He is one of the tiniest LSU football players of all time. The dude, I'm telling you, if he gets slightly bigger, he has got a real, real, real shot at being something. But at this point, the true freshman DBs you have to know, Juwan Johnson, PJ Woodland, and Deshaun Spears. Those are the bigs. And you've got to be knowingly, understandingly patient with them, okay? Now, as we always do, first $20 super chat gets gold pinned Charles Alexander Auto. We'll do that, or if you prefer, Jacobian Guillory rare one of one autograph and get that as well. Okay. Yeah, you've made this the Rashad Robinson. He does remind you they wear the same jersey number. Okay. Let's take a look at the poll question. How many of you can run a sub 5 flat 40-yard dash right now? 63% of you say no. 37% of you say yes. Y'all are the lyingest lying folk of all time. I think when you see like the NFL Combine and almost everyone is running a 40-yard dash, you just think it's easy, right? You think it's easy to eclipse a 5-flat 40-yard dash. Y'all, a 5-flat 40-yard dash is actually moving pretty fast. Okay. Let me look. Let's see. Let me go to this. Okay. So this was from last year. Coming up in about 5, you'll hear from Blake Baker. Okay. Make sure the volume's off on this. So last year, these guys, all right, these are like most of you, like average schmuck athletes. That is a 6.83 40-yard dash. This guy right here is hoofing. That's a 5.96. What makes y'all think y'all can run a sub-5 flat 40? Okay, I know these guys are hefty. You could tell that guy was running to make sure he didn't rip an ACL. All right. I go back to, like, none of these guys are close to a 5-flat. None of them. Okay. I understand. Not the most athletic bunch. But y'all. Kevin Hart is one of the most athletic dudes in his 40s. That is not a professional athlete. One of the most athletic guys, probably alive. He's probably in the top 1% of athletic dudes. And I know he's a comedian, but he takes it very seriously. He trains every single day. All right. A few months ago, it's roughly a year ago now, he decided to foot race Stephen Ridley. And when he ran, his body shredded. He said he just ripped everything, and he was wheelchair bound. All right. Kevin Hart's in his mid-40s. Okay. So he's younger than a lot of you, saying, hey, I can run a sub-flat 40-yard dash right now. And that was him sprinting. All right. So you also have to factor in, if you were to challenge yourself, all right, and say, look, I'm going to prove Carter wrong. I'm going to go outside, run a 40-yard dash right now, you're putting yourself in harm's way. Huh? This is a guy who trains every single day. High-intensity training. Go to his Instagram. Chan says it's because he's 4 foot tall. No stride. Huh? Oh, Kev didn't need to catch a stray. Kev did not need to catch a stray. Okay. Joseph says Cat Williams greater than Kevin Hart in the 40. Actually, you're right. So actually, now that you mentioned it, let me pull this up and we'll get back into some LSU football. By the way, Cat Williams headlined in Shreveport on Thursday at the, I'm so mad I missed this. Like, I'm still overcoming what I'm overcoming. And I'm actually covered in cream. So for those that don't know, for the last couple of weeks, I've been itching uncontrollably. I can't go to sleep at night. Still can't. I still itch like crazy. It's gotten better. But so I have a bunch of cream on my legs right now. Pause. I can't wait to get over this. The doctor says I have a week left. They claim this was a 40-yard dash from Cat Williams. First off, we don't even know if this is 40 yards. Okay. They said this was a 4.97. Okay. That's Mo Wells right there. He's a former LSU track and field athlete. He trains all the athletes. That's him right there. 497. Now, we'll say he is on turf, so this is the best surface you can ask for. 497. That's Mo right there in the blue. I'm covered in this itch cream, and it is not flattering. Okay. If you want me to show you, I will. It is not fun. Yeah, so what's funny is I've been eating terribly because I don't really like cooking. And my wife's been super busy, but my weight's not gone up too bad. At least I don't think so. Emma Cat, I'm sorry, dude. You can't run a 5 flat 40. I'm sorry. You know, I love you, bro, but it's just not happening. It's just not. All right. Coming up, Blake Baker sets a record straight on the LSU defense. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top 5 pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com.
All right. I'm right now we're mixing a lot of different people with a lot of different groups. I would say we haven't settled in any type of depth chart. Overall, I would say I'm pleased where we're at. We still got a long way to go, but as far as the physicality, the want to, we've shown so much improvement from spring. I thought the guys did a really, really good job in summer on their own, really learning the playbook, and then you can see it's carried on in the fall. Right now, we pretty much have 90% of our playbook in, and we're calling it all. So there's a lot on their plate mentally, but I feel like they're doing a pretty good job. Still looking for some more consistency out of the unit, but overall pleased with where they're at. So after that, I'll open it up.
Coach, I know it's early, but can you talk about stopping the run right up the A-gap and covering on the outside and over the top with the secondary so far?
Yeah. That's where we got to get more consistency, a little bit. Sometimes when we do our job, we're pretty good. Today we ended up giving up a deep ball from a coverage bust, and then we had a big run hit up the A-gap from an assignment standpoint. So when we play it right, we're pretty good. When we don't, we got to get it on the ground from the secondary. So, again, looking for marked improvement. These next 6 days, we have a recovery day. Then we go 6 days straight. I think the cream will start rising to the crop, and we'll figure out. Again, we're mixing and matching a lot of guys right now, and so it's hard to pinpoint who on that play or who on that play necessarily didn't do their job. But, overall, we just got to be more consistent as a unit. You know, in today's game, you can't just play with 11 players. You got to have 22, 25, 26, especially with the opportunity now with a playoff. So we're looking to build depth right now, and then by the next 6 days, we're going to start paring it down and figuring out who's our guys.
Coach, with Harold on the inside linebacker, how has he sort of reacted? Like how quickly is he sort of picking up that spot?
He's done an unbelievable job. Harold Perkins right now is playing on fire. Again, have a lot on his plate mentally. We have packages. We're moving him all around, so he's not just playing on the inside. But he's fitting the run as well as anybody that we have at linebacker right now. I think our linebackers are doing a good job overall fitting the run, but very, very pleased with Harold and really his development. Again, you talk about from where we started this thing at the beginning of spring to where he is now, it's night and day. And he's an ascending player. I really think he's not even scratching the surface still of where he's going to be. So I look forward to, you know, every single week him improving, but very, very happy with what he's doing right now.
All right. So let's conversate a little bit here about Harold Perkins. You know, it's interesting when you break down what he's done in his first couple of years at LSU. It's really impressive. You can make a very strong case. How many true freshman seasons were better than Harold Perkins' true freshman season? Okay. There's not many. There's honestly not many. You have to put up there, obviously, Derek Stingley just a few years ago. Leonard Fournette had a pretty solid true freshman season, not really all that spectacular. But, you know, there were people that were wondering, hey, is this not the Heisman Trophy winner? Is he not the best player in college football? And for a month stretch, he was the best player. You know, you can make a strong case that in that middle eight-ish weeks from, you know, Mississippi State to Arkansas, there was not a better player in college football. Now, what changed? Well, B.J. Ojulari left. And that obviously, you know, made life a little bit more difficult on Perk. But not only B.J. Ojulari left, Jaquelin Roy left, Ali Gay left, a lot of those glue guys left, Matt House regressed. But what ultimately happened was decisiveness. We really couldn't figure out what the best thing for him was. And Blake Baker, I feel, is going to be more willing to stick to a plan here with Harold Perkins as the off-ball linebacker. Sure, we like him at the jack, or even though there's not really a jack in this defense anymore, you like him on the edge as a pass rusher. But there's limitations for him as a pass rusher. He's not the biggest guy, not the best versus a run. Also, there's future limitations at the next level with him just solely being a pass rusher, just purely based on size. I think if he were to just be a full-time edge guy going to the NFL, he would be one of the lighter guys we've seen. So, you know, I think this move to off-ball linebacker is going to be really, really freaking good for him. Okay. Billy, good to have you back. Dante, good to have you back. There you go. So it's good hearing Harold Perkins is doing really well. I also, and this is always going to be my longest held conspiracy theory. It's not really a conspiracy. I actually do believe this to be true. The Florida State game ruined the LSU defense in a lot of different ways. Okay. It was a brutal matchup. We went up against receivers that were bad matchups for us that supremely hurt the confidence of some of our guys in our secondary. And for a first-time off-ball linebacker to be playing a counter-run scheme, that is brutal if that's not your natural position, which it was brutal for Harold Perkins. I think this first game versus USC, I think USC's offense is still going to be very good. They're not going to be Florida State good, and I do think Lincoln's offense is better suited for some of the things that Harold Perkins is going to do. So Harold is going to have better coaching in this off-ball, weak side linebacker role. You know, the Will and the Mike to me is basically the same thing in this role when it's not. I know it's one of my hotter takes, but you know, I think Harold Perkins is going to be a better off-ball linebacker this year. He is now. Are teams going to do a lot of misdirection and stuff thrown his way? Sure. Are they going to try and get him into tough coverage situations? Sure. But Perk still had games last year. Like the Missouri game was really freaking good last year. All right, more from Blake.
Coach, right over here. We got a chance to see Jacobian today and how vocal he was out there. Can you talk about his development, both mentally stepping into a leadership role and just physically how he's been able to advance over the offseason?
Yeah, it's been fun, obviously, being here Jacobian's freshman year to now, watching him grow more off the field than on the field. He's always been a big, strong player inside, but he's really, really matured off the field and becoming a vocal leader in a positive way. So it's been really, really cool to see that standpoint. I'd say, you know, I feel really, really good with him inside. Again, strong at the point of attack. He's played a lot of football. So he understands block recognition. He does a good job getting the calls and executing the calls. So it's been neat, you know, kind of being away for a couple of years and then coming back to see him and to see his growth. You know, he just had a baby boy, and that sometimes changes you as well. So really, really happy with Jacobian and love what he's doing out there on the field.
With a guy like Zy Alexander, when he's coming back from an injury and you're working back slowly, what's your goal for him? Or I guess kind of what are your expectations for what a kind of a timeline looks like for a guy like that?
Yeah, I think you know, it's hard with ACLs to put like an exact timeline on it, because a lot of times, you know, they might be healed physically and then it's just the mental piece of it, of being able to change direction a bit, you know, taking a hit on it. I think he hit over 20 the other day for the first time, kind of got his legs tangled up in a deep post the other day and popped right up. So I've been happy. Again, I don't want to put a timeline and say this is when we're expecting him back. But I, you know, I didn't have necessarily an expectation going into fall camp, but I would say he's exceeded probably what I thought he would do.
Coach, going back over to Jacobian, what kind of relationship have you developed with him over the years? And, you know, you've coached obviously a lot of defenses over the years. What makes him stand out as a player? You've coached a lot of good defensive tackles like D-Rob last year at Mizzou. What makes him stand out among all defensive linemen that you've been able to coach?
Yeah, I think Jacobian and I have a really, really good relationship. Again, he's a guy, you know, and usually this is the case with older guys. You can kind of be a little more loose with them because they know when to turn it on and when to turn it off. So I would say we probably have a pretty playful relationship, but when it's time to go to work, he knows when it's time to go to work. The thing that really, you know, going back to what I just said about him, the thing that separates him is, one, his strength. You know, he's got a low center of gravity, really, really good lower and upper body strength, but then also block recognition. You know, so that just comes from experience. But those are probably the two things that separates him from the rest of our guys right now.
Hey, Coach, over here. Ashton Sampson's really stepped up in the fall camp. Can you talk a little bit about his performance in fall camp and what he's done to become that guy?
Ashton's worked his tail off to get where he's at. You know, he's a guy that, you know, if I was up here in the summer doing whatever, every time I go to the indoor, he was on the jug machine, or he was working on the bands, or he was working his footwork. So you know, credit to what he's been able to do. You know, he's still a young player, and I challenge him every day. I'm looking for more consistency out of Ashton. He has stepped his game up, but he's not where we need him to be overall. And that's not a knock, but we got two more weeks to get him to be what he is capable of being, you know, from a mental consistency standpoint.
Coach, this is your second stint here at LSU. You did a heck of a job in Missouri, but when you got that phone call to come back here, what was it like for you?
Oh, good question. In all honesty, it was bittersweet. I knew this was home. I knew this was my family's home, but at the same time, I enjoyed my time in Missouri. Coach Drinkwitz and that staff, really, really close with, the players up there. And obviously, anytime you're riding the high of a Cotton Bowl championship, it always makes it, you know, more difficult. But at the end of the day, this is home. This is one of the few jobs, you know, complete transparency, that I told Coach Drinkwitz with, you know, if they do call, I'm going to listen. And so we got a very good relationship, was honest throughout the entire process. But at the end of the day, I knew this is what was the best fit for me and my family. So very, very happy to have this job.
Coach, now that you've gotten a couple weeks of camp under your belt, what do you think the identity of this defense will be, and what are you hoping to see it become?
What I want it to be, or what we are right now? Right now, I'll be honest, we're inconsistent. What I want it to be, if we do our job, I think we got a chance to be pretty good. I really do. I think we have all the pieces in place to have a good defense. What I want to see is a little more player-led accountability, and guys just doing their job on a consistent basis. If we do that, we can have a good year. We're not there yet, but I think we have really good speed. I think we're physical. We're still improving as a tackling unit right now, but we have shown improvement from the spring. I think our guys really work hard at it. You know, you don't have a lot of opportunities to tackle live throughout fall camp, but we work hard on it, you know, through drill work and whatnot. But I think we have a chance to be pretty good. We just got to be more consistent.
Coach, you kind of touched on this already, but I was going to ask about how much opportunity you've had to work on live tackling, and what's your philosophy for executing live tackling versus keeping your players healthy?
Today was our second day of live tackling. And honestly, you know, in today's game, I would say most places I've been, the most you probably get is four. You know what I mean? And that's why it's so important when we do thud, or even when we do tag. To me, tackling is – it's as much about the approach, it's much about the angle, it's much about knowing where your help is coming from as it is getting the guy on the ground. As crazy as that sounds, you know, we drill it all the time with tackling circuit. They're getting drill work from that standpoint, as far as getting, you know, bags or donuts or whatever the case may be on the ground. It to me, you really, really have to press upon the importance of the angles of where your help's coming from, of your approach, if you're coming from the back end. So, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, that's just the way the game is now. So you got to be really, really sharp, and you got to coach it hard. You know, it's easy to kind of to, oh, well, you know, we did our job in 7-on-7, but we didn't have a good angle, or we weren't in a good position, you know, whenever we were able to tag off. Those are the things you really have to harp on to be a really good tackling team. And I think we are. I think we're making progress from that standpoint.
Blake, Savion and Jacobian were talking the other day about how your offensive line is probably one of the best in the country, and that they look forward to the challenge every day of going against them. How is your front seven stacked up against the veteran line? And also, can you tell us a little bit more about Poodles?
Yeah, sure can. The first part of the question is, I think our offensive line is fantastic. I think they're experienced. I think Coach Davis does a really, really good job. I think they're physical. They play hard. I thought the same thing about them when I went against them last year at Missouri. So, you know, I know they got one new starter, but they're a very cohesive unit, played a lot together. You know, again, inconsistent. Sometimes we hold up really well, and then sometimes we don't. So, again, you know, I know I keep harping on the word, but, again, when we play with proper technique and do what we need to do, we can hold our own in there. And then as far as – Oh, yeah. I do believe we have one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines in the country. So for sure, you know, it's going to make us better. And it gives you a fair evaluation. You know, sometimes you're on some teams where the offensive line might not be that good, and then you get it in the fall and you're like, oh, you know, we're not as good as we thought we were on defense, you know? So, they're a very good challenge for us every day, but it definitely gets us better. And then Poodles, that's a lack of physicality or, trying to show up your teammate. You know, if a big thing to me is body language, you know, if a guy gets beat deep and he puts his palms up, that's a poodle. You know, if we turn down a hit, that's a poodle. So we don't want poodles.
Hey, Coach. Coach Kelly and several of your players have talked about paralysis by analysis. That's what they want to avoid, and that they're doing less thinking. It's more playing football. Can you speak to that and what you're implementing from that aspect?
Absolutely. I think our scheme is very user-friendly, very player-friendly. You know, we really do work hard sometimes, you know, it takes some time, but we do a really good job of things as a staff compartmentalizing things, putting things in buckets, trying to give them some word association so it's clicking with them pretty quickly. And I think our guys are playing really fast, sometimes too fast, and that's sometimes part of our inconsistency right now. But in all honesty, you know, that's okay. Sometimes, you know, you'd rather have to pull the chain back than have to kick them on the booty on the way out the door. So we just got to slow them down in some instances. But I think our kids are playing fast. Again, I think it really has to do with the way we implement the scheme. And then I think we got really good you know, teachers, is, you know, when you look at our coaching staff, these guys have coached in a lot of different schemes. They understand football. They understand concepts, you know, but I think that's the biggest thing. And then the second part of it is communication. I think our guys have really stepped up from a verbal communication standpoint, pre-snap and post-snap, which allows us to play faster. And it builds trust in the unit. So, again, once we start separating the units a little bit and not mixing and matching so many bodies, I should see an uptick in that just because you're working with the same one or two guys, you know, on an every snap basis.
First off, I want to shout out Blake Baker and the style. There's not a better coach look than the sweater vest cutoff with the purple shirt underneath. I've always rocked this look. He's got the shades, got the baseball hat. Gotta love it. So, once again, I understand. I have been accused of glazing too hard on the Blake Baker hire. But I'm just telling you, the vibes are high, okay? What gave me a chill down my spine, I didn't want to interrupt it because he was on a roll. He says we're not where we need to be. He says we are not where we need to be. He says the intensity needs to be better. Our accountability needs to be better. LSU's defense last year played like a bunch of individuals as a part of an ecosystem. One thing that I do feel I love about this LSU defense is every single player here has a lot of money at stake. You know, I reached out to a player personnel buddy of mine, and obviously, you know, he mentioned Harold Perkins as a guy that's, you know, on everybody's NFL's radar. But like we mentioned earlier, it's a little ambiguous. You know, I think NFL teams are trying to figure out what exactly is Harold Perkins as a player. He is on every like first round defensive mock you'll see, but you know, outside of him, who on this team has a bona fide NFL role next year? You know, there were a lot of guys on last year's team that had, you know, draftable grades, if you will. Okay. And, you know, the loss of Greg Brooks can't be understated enough, but, you know, this was a team that was just out. They were just out of it. Now you have a bunch of guys that really need to prove it. They know it's their money year. They know this is their final hurrah here. And it's interesting. There's a lot of like guys that have been okay, like playable SEC players, but they've not necessarily been great. Now they're starters, and let's see what they can do. Let's see what they can do. So there you go. Okay. Everyone's still debating their 40-yard dash time. I should have never asked this question. We continue, though, with the great Blake Baker.
Coach over here. So I know you and Coach Sloan were together at Louisiana Tech, and just being together, what just happened? And now, fast forward now to LSU, what have you seen from him as a coach from then to now? And just talk about yourself as well, how you think you've grown since your time at Tech.
I think Joe has, you know, I always say as coaches, you know what you know, and Joe was with Skip Holtz for a really, really long time. And so he knew that offense. And I think with him coming here for that year and learning a different scheme, and then he's really, really smart. And so for him to be able to build on that and really make it his own, again, playing them last year to see him what we see in the fall, it's not the same offense. It's cool, you know, and I give it credit to him that you know what you know, but he's been able to make it his own and build on what they did last year. So it's been neat to see. As far as me, I look back at those years and I'm like, man, I was an idiot a bunch of times, man. You know, and it just comes with experience. You know, you look at some of the things that you might have done from a schematic standpoint that now probably are like, man, we got lucky as hell if that works. So, and just the game has slowed down. You know, your first couple of years as a play caller, especially on defense, offense is probably usually more off of a call sheet where defense might be a little bit more off field. The game has definitely slowed down over the last 10 years.
Coach, a guy like Whit Weeks, we saw some flashes from him as a freshman. Just what do you see from him so far in camp, and how can he kind of step up to kind of maybe give the other linebackers a breather or just step up whenever they decide to that their time here is done after the season?
Whit is a phenomenal football player, extremely hard worker, never takes a playoff. His effort is second to none. He can really run. He's going to play. He's going to be an integral part. He's just not a backup. You know, I look at it in my room, and I know you asked specifically about Whit, but I do believe we have four starters in that room, so he's going to play a ton. And I think he just needs to keep doing what he's doing. He's very inquisitive. He's always wanting to know what he can do better. And he's really improved his game. So I'm very pleased with where he's at.
Hey, Coach, right here. You know, with the defensive line kind of being young and inexperienced, how important is it to have two coaches like Bo Davis and Coach Peoples?
Yeah, I think the defensive line, in my opinion, it's two completely different positions. I think it's really, really hard in today's game for what we do schematically, not speaking for other teams. It's very hard to have one guy coaching all four because it's two different worlds. Where defensive ends nowadays are, I mean, we call them edges. They're more like outside linebackers. You know, you're playing a five, you're playing a six, where you're not really getting double teamed. You know, defensive tackle, you're getting double teamed almost every play. So I think those two are the best in the business. And I've been around a bunch, and I think those two are as good as it gets. And they work really well together. You know, they both have a Pete Jenkins background. And so they have the same, you know, philosophically the same ideas. But those two guys are huge of what we're doing up front. Thank y'all. Appreciate it. You got it.
Blake Baker right there. Obviously, he's bullish on his unit. He called him out, which I love. I like a coach that is fearless in doing that. But one thing you have to understand, if you're going to like say, hey, there are days we need to be better, we want more accountability, that means you're asking more personally out of your players. You're not asking them, hey, play harder or play better. We need you to also act on playing better. Okay? If that is the case, that means he feels he has a good relationship with everyone in there. Okay? So, bottom line, Blake Baker is going to be a really good DC at LSU. And I love a chance to get to hear from the coordinators. Can't say that enough. It drove me crazy during the Orgeron tenure that we hardly ever got to hear from the coordinators at LSU. Okay. Now I want to show you this. Take a look at this. Blake Baker, this is via LSU football as well. That would have been picked off by Harold Perkins if it was accurate. But look at, I mean, you just can't teach this, man. You just can't teach this. You know, the vibes, bro. I love this play call, too. Corner blitz, okay? That's Ashton Stamps right there. And pump fake. Garrett's got to throw this away, and it's picked off by Baker. I'm glad Garrett threw it high, or else Perk would have had a pick six right there. So, there you go. Nothing like football. You know, I want to talk a little bit, and I know we kind of brushed over the beginning. I'll talk a little bit more about Philip Wright. You know, I don't know if I'll get around to doing like a public film study. I do feel LSU is in line at getting another tight end. Thank you, Jared, first super chat of the night. Once again, first $20 super chat gets a Charles Alexander autograph gold card. Philip Wright's very interesting. I am all about recruiting Destrehan. Okay. LSU is not the program it is now without Destrehan High School. Okay. The game of football is not what it is today without high school football players from Destrehan High School. Okay. I like the fact that, you know, we're taking a chance on 2-3-star players from Destrehan. Now, Jace Thomas is moving up the ranks. He's more of a 4-star. But Philip Wright is a speedster. 5'11", 170. All right. One thing that's been very interesting about LSU is they have recruited more of these types of athletes. Michael Turner was this, and they moved him to DB. Obviously, Jelani Watkins was this. Okay, they recruited Jaylen Brown in the last class, and it didn't really work out. So what's very interesting about LSU's recruiting at the wide receiver position is there's no real middle ground. You know, Teron Francis is more of your typical like 6'1", you know, 190 wide receiver. But a lot of the receivers that LSU has recruited have been 6'2", 6'3", all the way up to 6'5", 6'6", guys. And the opposite of that is also true. A lot of 5'10", 5'11", 170 guys. So it's very interesting. It's something that, you know, historically, LSU's best receivers are the ones that are of typical size, like 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2", in that 180, 190, 200 range. All right. But I like Philip Wright. I've seen, you know, not a whole lot of him, not really sat down and been able to do a hardcore watch on him. But this is someone LSU really wanted, and they got him to flip from Michigan. Okay. Let's go to Pegasus here. Does this mean anything for Jamie French? Okay. So Jamie French obviously committing pretty soon. Look, I'll pull up his profile just to make sure we are all on the same page here. And we'll pull up his 247 profile. And his recruitment is coming to the end. Now, we're still a few weeks away from it. But, yeah, you know, I don't think LSU's out of it. By any stretch of the imagination. Jacksonville, obviously a place that they've, you know, recruited recently with Colin Hurley. I would lean no. I'm feeling this is a Texas, Ohio State kind of situation. You know, Ohio State's crushed it recruiting the state of Florida and just recruiting 5-star wide receivers, obviously. Most recently, Jeremiah Smith, but I am not feeling the absolute best about Jamie French's chances of going to LSU. Okay. Okay. Now, does this mean anything? Not really. You know, they got Derek Meadows, who's a top 50 wide receiver. But what I would say about Derek Meadows is I wouldn't put him in the same category as like your typical, you know, wide receiver. Okay. So the on-three index is Jamie French going to Texas. Okay. That's where Khalik Lockett just went. We have heard the five-star receivers in his class. Some of them say, hey, we all want to go to the same school. So if that's the case, then French will likely join Lockett or join DeCorian Moore at Oregon. But at this point, they believe Texas is a leader. LSU in the mix along with Ohio State. You know, I think LSU wants to get another receiver. I do, even though they already have three in this class. I am not so sure if they view Derek Meadows as just a wide receiver, right? I like Teron Francis, and I like Phillip Wright. So they're at three right now, but I think they want to be at four, okay? So, look, you know, do I like Jamie French? I do. Obviously, as I said before, I thought Khalik Lockett, I just think he's better. I think when it's all said and done, he has a really high likelihood of being the best receiver in the entire class. But I like that French has Louisiana connections, as Chance points out. I like the fact that, you know, he's made his recruiting visits here. So we'll see. He's spelled Jaime. It's about Jaime. So I saw it was Jamie, and I always pronounce it Jamie, but then I saw it was spelled Jaime, and then someone corrected me and said, hey, it's actually pronounced Jaime. And I was like, what? And then for so long, I started saying Jaime. No one corrected me, but it is Jamie, I believe. I don't know. Who knows? So it's not pronounced like the Jaime Spanish is spelled. It's Jamie. Cardell is at Colorado. Cardell Thomas. Mr. Pancake. Is that Colorado now? Okay. You can run a sub 540 yard dash right now. 60% of you say no. Okay, this is kind of leveled out here just a little bit. I'm not saying ever. I think 60-40 is fine forever. But y'all, I was a four-sport athlete. Four-sport athlete. Okay. I wasn't close to a 5-flat. I think I was like 5'2", maybe. Maybe on my absolute best day. Now, I think what's more impressive, is if you've ever run a 6-minute mile, which I have done. I think a 6-minute mile is something a lot more people can reach. 5-flat 40-yard dash, yeah, I think that's a have it or you don't kind of thing. I think 6-minute mile, it could just be that I accomplished it, but I think more people can do that. Let's go to Chance. He says, can we discuss how one school, Destrian, could be so loyal and how Westgate has gone rogue? Yeah, it's weird. Okay, so let's take a look at Destrian. They did have a guy go to Ole Miss last year, but I don't know if he was recruited by LSU. Yeah, you know, obviously Destrian's best player, Ed Reed, didn't go to LSU. But you look at Westgate. So Kayshawn went to LSU. Demarion Johnson went to LSU. And then you have Danny Lewis, Alabama. Jabari Antoine, I think he went to Miami. And who else from Westgate? Derek Williams. Didn't Josh Butte or Butte go to didn't he go to Westgate? Yeah, so Derek Williams. Okay. Tony said he ran a 10-minute 2 mile. Yes, I think you can train yourself into running a better mile per se. Now, I do want to share something that was it was pretty big to me personally that happened. All right. This tweet is actually from Lamar Jackson. All right. And I'm going to share why this is relevant here in just a second. So Cam Newton is available. Who is the best dual threat QB in history? This tweeter said it was Lamar Jackson, but Lamar replied, it is this guy. So if you don't know who this is, you should. It's Doug Williams, the first ever black quarterback to start and win a Super Bowl. And he is from Baton Rouge, played at Grambling. He's actually from, shout out to Pierce, Zachary. So we're talking about Louisiana history in this photo. Okay. Now, I know I've tweeted this 1,000 times, but Doug Williams is very important to me because, well, he's Baton Rouge football history. Okay. And a lot of my parents and family live in DC. Okay. So there's Jay Johnson with Paul Skeens right there. I mean, Jaden Daniels just gets it. He just gets it. First game, what is the first thing Jaden Daniels does? The first thing, he says, look, I want to honor my history with Doug Williams as the throwback jersey. And there's also a photo of Jaden with Doug Williams like kind of like floating in the background. Let me see if I could find it really quickly. Here. Okay. There it is. Look at this. I mean, Jaden just, dude, there's just some people in life who just get it. All right. Some people know what it takes. All right. 5 a.m. film sessions, toughness, greeniness, not listening to the haters or the naysayers, all that crap. Jaden just freaking gets it. All right. He just does. Not many people do. All right. There is hardly any good history with the Commanders. Okay. Actually, I take that back. There's a lot of good history with the Commanders. It's so long ago since the Joe Gibbs era that you just kind of forget about it. But if you want, I do need to send Jaden Daniels some booger bands. So Pierce, our resident Zachary expert. HTTR, baby. HTTR. I'm so excited for Jaden with Washington. Commanders have always kind of been my second team because I have so much family in D.C. and I was born around the same time as the 1989 Super Bowl. So, God bless you, Doug Williams. And if this is your first time ever hearing about Doug Williams, well, there you go. Grambling's football history is just so insane, dude. It is so insane. I'll always rock Southern over Grambling because I have more family that went to Southern than Grambling. But, dude, Grambling, dude, you can't tell the history without college football. You can't tell the history of college football without Grambling football. Okay? So freaking cool. Now, John probably knows Doug Williams because, you know, Sibley knows everyone, especially from that era. But Doug Williams was good, man. Dude. Yeah, Jared, I would like to think so. That was my dream. The most famous LSU athlete that has objectively worn a booger band or a PHL band, okay? The only one actually was wearing it in his most viral photo of his life. Paul Skeens. He actually just showed you a photo of Paul Skeens. His first public photo with Livy Dunn was at the LSU-Arkansas game. And I gave Paul Skeens a PHL band. He put it on, man. Dude, I know people say this stuff about celebrities all the time. They say it all the time. So-and-so's the best guy ever. But I recently had a conversation with someone who knows Paul and has done, you know, business with Paul. And he literally says the same thing. He's like, he says, Paul Skeens is like too nice. Like he also is one of those guys that just gets it. So very, very lucky that Paul Skeens didn't big time me. Joe Burrow's got his PHL band. I don't know if he still has it. He wears so many of them. I'm not mad at it that he doesn't wear them. But this is how much the medicine, the creams, the heavy creams, I had to take them off because I itch so much. Like, literally, you don't see it below my desk, but I've scratched pivots into my thighs. That's how much this itching stuff sucks. There you go, Chance. Who was the coolest one, the coolest athlete you met at the Black College Football Hall of Fame inductee? Yeah, Pierce, you're right. It was Paul Skeens. He is the most famous PHL band-wearing member of PHL Nation. Forever grateful for him to doing that for me. Big moment. I'm glad to be going through what your puppy is going through right now. Let's see here. What was I gonna do? Like, subscribe, ring the bell, all that stuff. Oh, this is what I wanted to get to. All right. Big shout out to the NoOffseason.com network for making me the coolest website. You can go to carterthepower.com and check it out for yourself. And you can also see all my Power Hour NFL videos. Like I said, my Jaden film study. Not too bad after one day. 14,000 views. And you also got Spencer Rattler, Anthony Richardson. I have a lot of Colts fans on Power Hour NFL. But it's amazing. I've had a few videos go over 50K now, you can have all those views and not all those subscribers. So please go subscribe, watch those videos. Trajectory of that channel is on the way up. So appreciate that. And for the SEC channel this year, I am still going to be doing SEC streams and stuff like that. I'm dedicating a weekly Arkansas stream. I'll be doing that every Monday at 5 p.m. Okay, so every Monday, 5 p.m., I will be going live on Power SEC for Arkansas, and I'm actually going to do a Tennessee show. Arkansas and Tennessee, those fan bases, they're not as good as LSU fans. I'll never say that, nor do I believe it. But then again, I'm an LSU fan myself. Arkansas and Tennessee fans, they are so good. They're so good. Okay? So I'm going to show some love and be like, hey, I'm going to do a show for just you guys every week. Am I doing a live in Vegas? Okay. I'm still determining, like, the hard thing about, like, scheduling something in Vegas, because I was in the process and then I got sick, right, with this itch. I want to make sure that this itch is completely gone away. I'm going to be able to go. I've spent too much money already. But I don't want to just finalize, like, doing a show somewhere and then not being able to go if my condition worsens. It's getting better. So, good thing there. I also, though, like, I would also prefer to just do, like, a day where I'm just hanging out with you guys. Because it's hard to, you know, do a show and then also schmooze with your guests. So I might do one for the Arkansas game later this year, though. That would be something that would be a lot of fun. So that's where I'm at right now with that. And, man, I can't freaking wait. I can't freaking wait. Okay. Let's see here. You know someone who had a tough game today. Tough. And you guys might be right. All right. You guys know when it comes to analysis, I have strong takes. So a few years ago, we had a huge, it was Blake and Pooh Bear on here at the same time. We had a huge draft debate over Anthony Richardson. I liked Anthony Richardson in the NFL. I really, really, really do. I still do. But, you know, Blake and Pooh Bear just weren't as high on him as I was. I was fine with the Colts picking him fourth overall. But, man, today was rough. I did a whole film study on it. It was rough. Okay? You guys might be right. You guys might be right, and I might be wrong. It's probably still going to take a year for him to work in the NFL. He's just played so little. And I go back to this with Jaden Daniels, why I freaking love Jaden so much. And I get so sick and tired of people comparing him to RG3. Yeah, they're very similar, so on and so on. Okay. I just don't think RG3 was as good in college as Jaden. And RG3 was really good. RG3 is definitely one of the better Heisman winners, but Jaden is just, to me, on a different level. But one of the more underrated things about Jaden is he has never sat the bench. Never. Okay? He has started every single year as a quarterback. He started 5 years in high school, or excuse me, 4 years of high school football, 5 years of college. So he's got 9 consecutive years of starting reps. 9 consecutive. All right. Anthony Richardson has started 2 years of games, maybe in his collegiate and NFL career combined. I think he started 2 years in high school as well. So quarterback is one of those things where it really is repetition-based. It really is. The amount of reps you get really helps you out in the long term. Okay. Pegasus says, you have to admit, Carter, RG3 and Jaden stories are pretty similar so far. Heisman Trophy, dual threat. Yeah, I could see it. You know, both teams were, what, 10-3? But I just think Jaden was just better. I do. Now, RG3 would sit here and tell you, well, his supporting cast was infinitely better than mine's, and he would be right. But I just think Jaden's a little bit further along. And this will get me in trouble because I do like RG3 as an analyst, even though he and I have had some back and forth on Twitter. I do think there was a little bit more like maturity kind of things with RG3 during his Washington tenure. Now, having the ownership that Washington has doesn't help the situation. But once again, I'm not going to sit here and claim and tell you that I know Jaden Daniels. I can also tell you that I'm not sure if Jaden has ever sat down and watched one of my shows. But I speak to people that do know him, someone that's in his inner circle. Jaden is business, man. The dude is about business. Now, does he enjoy being a celebrity? Sure. Sure, of course. Who doesn't? But when it comes down to it, Jaden is a blue-collar, buckle-your-chin-straps leader. And I'm not saying RG3 wasn't a great leader. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he wasn't a great NFL quarterback. He's a really good NFL quarterback. Injuries happen. But Jaden is the real deal. And I already have Jaden as my number two quarterback in the NFC. And that has not been well received. We don't know if he's better than Caleb at this point. And Caleb looks pretty good. But to me, by the end of next season, Jaden will be the second best quarterback in the NFC. Behind someone who actually is from Louisiana. Okay. Mel Blount. The DB. Rich Tombstone Jackson. That's a great nickname. Jared says behind Derek Carr. All right. So let's do this. Next 5 to 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. Appreciate you guys. Over 150 people on a Sunday on all platforms. Really appreciate that. My goal during the season is every live stream, at least 200 people. I'm happy with that, but obviously I want to hit 1,000. Our highest viewed live stream ever was LSU women's basketball earlier this year. I want to get a football one that gets up to 1,600, which is where we were for the women's game. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the Saints. There was a piece of me, and I don't let the refs try to decide anything, and I'm over it now, but I wanted to update you guys. I spent a month and a half working on a Drew Brees deep dive, and I'm pushing it to next offseason because I want to do more research on it, and I want to put together the most interesting Drew Brees like YouTube documentary together. So I'll be working on this for the next 6 months. And if any of y'all know Drew, I'd love to interview him for it. I would love to really break down how I feel he has gotten the wrong end of a few things. But, when I started working on this Drew Brees piece, I couldn't believe like how much the 2018 thing bothered me. So the head official last night was Bill Vinovic. He was this is the first time he had reffed a game since the 2018 fiasco, reffed a Saints game, and I partially couldn't watch it. I partially couldn't watch it because of that. I don't ever want to see that man again for a Saints game. But the Saints are in such a rough spot right now. All right. He is. So he did an interview recently with Albert Breer. But you know, it's interesting. Drew, I don't want to put this. Drew always put us in a great situation, leadership wise and so on. But I hate the thing that really bothers me about the Saints is you legit have some of the most lovable people that you can find on this team. All right. DeMario Davis, if you are a deeply religious person, there's probably not a football player you like in the NFL more than him. Now, obviously, Tyrann Mathieu, I need not go any further. And then Cam Jordan. I mean, find a defense that has three more likable guys than the Saints do in those three. Legit, universal. Everyone loves those people. And then offensively, you still have Alvin Kamara back there, Taysom Hill. You have a lot of these Breeze-era guys that you also just like. But none of it matters with the head coach being as bad as it is with Dennis Allen. And it bothers me, all right? You know, I have nothing against the Saints. I love the Saints. I love, the direction that, you know, that ownership group, the Bensons. I like the fact that they're owned by the same people. It makes me feel a lot more bullish on the future of the Pelicans in New Orleans, which is very important to me. I love the Pelicans as much, if not more, than the Saints. But the decision of running back here with Dennis Allen, it's just not where I want it to be. I also hate the quarterback situation with Derek Carr. I probably drafted way too much Derek Carr this offseason for fantasy teams. Way too much. And a lot of the fantasy that I play is back-weighted, so you really need to be on the field for week 17. I do not think Derek Carr finishes the season. I don't. And now, where it gets weird is you have two backup quarterbacks that profile very similarly. All right. You have Jake Haener, and you also have, obviously, Spencer Rattler. Both high IQ, both on the shorter end, both have some mobility. And Jake Haener looked good last night. Spencer Rattler looked good. Both looked way better than Derek Carr. So, you also have a QB situation where you want to see what you have with Spencer Rattler. But what if Jake Haener actually is good? You know, if you get good QB production on a rookie deal, you want to see what you have. And once the Saints get out of playoff contention, which I think that they will, you have to see if either of those guys are the guy. I'll say, well, you would be the king of PHL if you did that. I understand it's a long shot. That's also one of those things where I don't really get nervous for interviews. That would be one of them. Oh, man. Jared is, he super chatted earlier. I have no problem starting Rattler. The issue also is Jake Haener still deserves reps with the way that he played. So next preseason game, they'll probably start Hayner and then get to Rattler a little bit quicker. But, man, Spitz Rattler, he gets it. I understand that Netflix documentary, whatever the hell it was, didn't make him look great. That was a freaking high school documentary. A freaking high school documentary of a five-star quarterback who was dominating Arizona competition. Sure, he has a big head then, but he was a high school teenager. Since then, Rattler has been pretty lights out in every single interview. He's actually a very engaging, affable guy. So I like Spencer Rattler. I'm in the middle of him actually being a potential NFL starter. But he looked good yesterday. He looked good. He looked really good. Also talk some Olympics. Once again, if you have an LSU football-related question, go ahead and fire it in. This was a great Olympics. This was a sterling, amazing Olympics. So much drama. Track and field stuff was ridiculous. The basketball was ridiculous. Water polo came up short, crushed my heart. Still a lot of fun. One thing I like about the Olympics is my wife watches it. She watches it actually way more than I do. The hard part about the Olympics for me is this right now is actually my busiest time of the year. You know, I'm drafting a ton of fantasy football teams. I'm doing a lot of preseason football stuff, getting a lot of things in order. So this was probably the smallest amount of Olympics that I watch. But I have to give credit where credit is due. NBC made this stuff very digestible. Lots of clips. Peacock was really good. And I know we crap on streaming services all the time. Dude, they were good. Peacock was good. I loved the Snoop Dogg element. It was just really, really well done. Really well done. Okay. Now, did this major sporting event had its typical cultural war BS? Sure. But every single sporting event that is of magnitude, there's going to be stuff of that nature. Whatever the case may be, and I shouldn't even have brought it up because everyone's going to be firing in their takes. Whatever the case may be, it was good. The entire Olympics was good stuff. Really good. Also, just because he lost, and also because he didn't necessarily play the best, you cannot deny that Nikola Jokic is one of the 15 best NBA players of all time. You cannot deny that fact. Now, if he would have pulled off, if he would have pulled off beating Team USA, there would be no debate between him and a few of these guys on the all-time list. None. Okay? And what's funny is, like, I understand all-time list gets old, but, and at this point in his career, he's not close to me to Steph Curry, but, I mean, what Steph did in the Olympics, how many modern era guys can you put ahead of Steph Curry? Okay. Like we always do, post 2000 guys, can you put ahead of Steph Curry on the all-time best on the all-time best NBA list? Really, it's LeBron James and that's it. I mean, honestly, is LeBron ahead of Shaq? Or is Steph ahead of Shaq? I would say no, because I'm heavily biased, because I'm not really that big of a Steph fan, but I'm a huge Shaq fan. Is Steph ahead of Kobe? Most would say no. Most would still have Kobe and Shaq ahead of Steph. But I am not sure, man, that what he did in these closeout Olympic games, saving Team USA, Steph might be number two. He might be number two. Okay, post 2000 players. Is Steph Curry ahead of is Steph Curry ahead of Tim Duncan? That's tough. That's really, really, really tough. The one thing that's working against Steph Curry, if you do like the all-time list, is the defense, right? Like Tim Duncan and Shaq in particular were way better defenders, as was Kobe, was a better defender. But one thing I will say about Steph Curry that I do believe is undoubtedly true is he is the most influential basketball player since Michael Jordan. All right. You know, I'm not saying he's more influential in like total reach. I would obviously be LeBron James, but Steph completely changed basketball, completely changed it. And the only way you can really attest to this is when Steph was at his absolute peak. You could not go to a high school basketball game in America and not see 5'9" dudes chunking 30-foot threes as if they were good shots. I mean, Steph Curry fried the brains of many people in his three-point revolution. You know, it's insane. It's insane. Like, you know, he's kind of this shooting blueprint. Okay. Sibley said French did a good job. Paris is a great city, by the way. What about KD? Where is KD? I still, even though KD was once again phenomenal in this Olympics, you know, he's the best Olympic basketball player of all time. Can't deny that at this point. I still have Jokic ahead of Durant. I do. That one's really close. Really, really, really close. But I still put Steph Curry ahead of Kevin Durant, even though when they played, Durant won the, you know, finals MVPs both times. But I think, you know, I might be just too Steph-pilled at this point. Okay. This is something that someone else said that floated in my mind. Was Steph Curry more influential than Allen Iverson? I would say so, yes. But I will also say influence is a subjective thing. How the game is kind of played really changed with Steph, though. But influence is like, as far as like shifting the NBA's culture in a direction, AI is up there, right? He changed a lot, all right? Okay. But, you know, if you attended any high school basketball games, which I did, dude, there's kids jacking up threes. Oh, come on, Billy. Billy, all right. Billy comes in hot. To me, Allen Iverson is still the most important figure the game of basketball has ever seen. Well, first off, Billy, that is just, like, I know you said to you, but your opinion is wrong. I'm telling you more about you than you know about you, if that makes sense. Okay? Something else I would tell you is, well, the most important basketball figure is Dr. James Naismith, right? Huh? Oh, but one thing, if AI was sitting here right now, he would appreciate the compliment. But AI is such like a historian of the game. If like you ever listen to like an interview he does, he's such an NBA junkie that he would not accept that compliment either. But I will say, out of all these names that I mentioned outside of Shaq, AI is probably that guy for me. I loved Allen Iverson. I really did. So outside of Shaq, he's probably my favorite modern era guy. Okay. But you are right. Off the court, stylistically, the shooter sleeve, the hair, the whole thing, the baggy shorts, crossing up Jordan. It was cool. All right, let's go to Jay Madison. Obviously, the Jokic ring is doing a lot of heavy lifting. Jokic didn't face what KD did at his peak. Okay. All right. Strong disagreement here. I will also point out that, yeah, you know, Jokic is getting some of these tail end like LeBron years. But, you know, this is where I really push back. And I understand I've kind of become like a Jokic sympathizer on this network. But, you know, I can't get past what I saw with Jamal Murray this Olympics. He had a rough Olympics for Canada, all right? That has been their clear-cut number two guy. Clear-cut, the entire Nuggets tenure. Now, I'm not saying they don't have other good players. Aaron Gordon is good. Michael Porter is good, all right? But name a team that had, in modern NBA history, that had a worse number two on a championship team than Jokic. And obviously, you can make a case with the Raptors, but their number two would be Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, or Pascal Siakam. So it is doable to do what Jokic did, but Jokic had to fight through the Western Conference to win this ring. And he has done so with the supporting cast that he was given. Jamal Murray wasn't at times great in this last series versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay. So, yeah, could you make a case that Durant's era was tougher? Yeah, you know, he obviously had, you know, some of those Kobe years mixed in there. And a few Duncan years mixed in there. CP3 always being in the West Conference. So, yeah. But when has Durant not had other NBA top 75 players on his team? You know, you tell me. Okay. So many. Russell Westbrook. James Harden back in the day, okay? Then obviously with the Nets, it didn't work out with Kyrie and Harden. And then with the Warriors, and now with the Suns, he's got Devin Booker. You know, could you imagine what the Nuggets would look like right now if you take Jamal Murray out and put Devin Booker in on that team? Okay? Or let's just say you put Nikola Jokic on the Suns right now, and then you put Kevin Durant on the Nuggets, what is it going to look like? Okay. So, is KD one of the 20 best NBA players of all time? Probably so. But yeah. But you're right. No, you're right, Billy. I mean, a lot of suburban kids wearing cornrows and do-rags. I legit, for a year, went to school with a shooter sleeve. I wore a shooter sleeve in soccer because of Allen Iverson. You don't even use your arms in soccer. Huh? 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 Oh, man. AI, dude. True one of one. But that'll do it for me. I wanted to share some Olympic love here to Durant, Curry, and LeBron. One thing that kind of drove me crazy, though, was this Jason Tatum stuff. I'm like, why are we caring at all if he's not playing? He still gets a gold medal like everyone else. I don't give a damn about Jason Tatum's ego. And some of these Celtics fans were turning on Team USA because they weren't playing Tatum. I was like, they're still playing two other players on your team. They're still playing Drew Holiday a ton. They're still playing Derek White a ton. All right. Y'all, Steph, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant were all playing in the Olympics. Okay? That is enough said. There is nobody on the planet Earth that deserves to play more than those three for Team USA and everything they did for American basketball. Those three deserve most of the minutes. Okay? And it's not as if there weren't other minutes up for grabs. Devin Booker was amazing. Tatum was not good. He wasn't playing well. Okay? Also, Tatum played way longer in the season than the others. Now, there were a lot of sweeps, five-game sweeps and all that, so he didn't have an unbelievably arduous playoff run, but he still played longer. And Celtics have had a lot of late playoff runs. So, no matter what the case may be, this Olympics was about Steph. It was about Durant, who's the best Olympic basketball player of all time. It was about LeBron James. Okay? If you weren't one of those three guys, you needed to be a role player. All right? Devin Booker served his role. Derek White, all those guys. If those three are playing, they call the shots. That's just how it works. The coach calls the shots, but those three should be the one carrying us. I did think Steve Kerr made it worse, though, when he said, that's one of the biggest mistakes of my career, when you didn't play him in the first game. There are no mistakes you can make with a roster if you have Steph Curry, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant. You just play those three guys and put whoever the hell else you want out there. Okay? I was so sick and tired of this Jason Tatum stuff. You know, he should be like he's on the team at all. I'm not saying that he's not one of the 10 best players in the world right now. He is, no doubt. Okay. In 2028, he's going to get to be the guy. Either him or Ant, they're going to be the guys. Or LeBron. Hell, I'm not down on LeBron on anything right now. Huh? Oh, man. But that'll do it for me. Okay. That'll do it for me. Now, don't forget, we got extra film studies, all that stuff. I'll be on with Mr. Blake Ruffino tomorrow night, AYS, if you want more LSU hot takes. Okay? It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! And tonight, we are doing chicken enchiladas. Let's go. Let's go.